On December 31, 2011, President Obama signed into law the controversial National Defense Authorization Act for the fiscal year 2012. The act provides, inter alia, funding for the defense of the United States and its interests abroad, but it also contains provisions which deal with the authority to detain individuals supporting terrorism, and that could lead to the arbitrary and indefinite military detention of American citizens. Many have expressed their distrust about these provisions, since they could entail the arbitrary and indefinite military detention of American citizens. On December 14th, the White House announced that President Obama will not veto this military authorization bill, despite the fact it contains several disputed provisions about the treatment of terrorism prisoners. As the New York Times published on December 14, 2011, the administration has threatened to veto versions of the National Defense Authorization Act of 2012, passed by the House and the Senate, arguing that provisions would open the door for the military to perform policing functions inside the United States and that they would infringe on executive branch powers. But the White House said in a statement that adjustments made by a House-Senate conference committee had sufficiently addressed its concerns. As a result of these changes, we have concluded that the language does not challenge or constrain the President's ability to collect intelligence, incapacitate dangerous terrorists, and protect the American people, and the President's senior advisers will not recommend a veto, it said. The bill includes a narrow provision, drafted by the Senate, authorizing the government to detain, without trial, suspected members of the Al-Qaeda or its allies, or those who substantially supported them, bolstering the authorization enacted a decade ago against the perpetrators of the September 11th attacks. Another section would require officials to hold non-citizens suspected of being Qaeda operatives in military custody. The administration has focused its objections on that section, but the panel expanded the executive branch's ability to make exceptions. It also added language declaring that the new law would not restrict the existing authority of the FBI in terrorism matters. Still, the Bureau's director, Robert S. Mueller III, testified on that he remained unconcerned that it would introduce uncertainty about what should happen at the time of an arrest. On December 15, 2011, the New York Times published the following editorial on the National Defense Authorization Act. The trauma of September 11, 2001, gave rise to a dangerous myth that, to be safe, America had to give up basic rights and restructure its legal system. The United States was now in a perpetual state of war, the argument went, and the criminal approach to fighting terrorism and the due process that goes along with it wasn't tough enough. President George Bush used this insidious formula to claim that his office had the inherent power to detain anyone he chose, for as long as he chose, without a trial, to authorize the torture of prisoners, and to spy on Americans without a warrant. President Obama came into office, pledging his dedication to the rule of law and to reversing the Bush-era policies. He has fallen far short. Mr. Obama refused to entertain any investigation of the abuses of power under his predecessor, and he has been far too willing to adopt Mr. Bush's extravagant claims of national secrets to prevent any courthouse accountability for those abuses. This week, he is poised to sign into law terrible new measures that will make indefinite detention and military trials a permanent part of American law. The measures, contained in the annual military budget bill, will strip the FBI, federal prosecutors, and federal courts of all or most of their power to arrest and prosecute terrorists and hand it off to the military, which has made it clear that it doesn't want the job. The legislation could also give future presidents the authority to throw American citizens into prison for life without charges or a trial. The bill, championed by Republicans in the House and Senate, was attached to the military budget bill to make it harder for Mr. Obama to veto it. Nearly every top American official with knowledge and experience spoke out against the provisions, including the Attorney General, the Defense Secretary, the Chief of the FBI, the Secretary of State, and the leaders of intelligence agencies. And, for weeks, the White House vowed that Mr. Obama would veto the military budget if the provisions were left in. On December 14, 2011, the White House reversed field, declaring the bill had been improved enough for the President to sign it now that it had passed through Senate. This is a complete political cave-in, one that reinforces the impression of a fumbling presidency. To start with, this bill was utterly unnecessary. Civilian prosecutors and federal courts have jailed hundreds of convicted terrorists, while the tribunals have convicted half a dozen. And the modifications are nowhere near enough. Mr. Obama, his spokesman said, is prepared to sign this law because it allows the executive to grant a waiver for a particular prisoner to be brought to trial in a civilian court. But the legislation's ban on spending any money for civilian trials for any accused terrorist would make that waiver largely meaningless. The bill has so many other objectionable aspects that we can't go into them all. Among the worst, it leaves open the possibility of subjecting American citizens to military detention and trial by a military court. It will make it impossible to shut the prison in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. And it includes an unneeded expansion of the authorization for the use of military force in Afghanistan to include indefinite detention of anyone suspected of being a member of Al-Qaeda or an amorphous group of associated forces that could cover just about anyone arrested anywhere in the world. There is no doubt. This bill will make it harder to fight terrorism and do more harm to the country's international reputation. The White House said that if implementing it jeopardizes the rule of law, it expects Congress to work quickly and tirelessly to undo the damage. The White House will have to make that happen. After it abdicated its responsibility this week, we're not convinced it will. For Michel Chossudovsky, Professor of Economics at the University of Ottawa and President and Director of the Centre for Research on Globalisation, by signing this act into law, Obama implements police state USA. He points out that, with minimal media debate, at a time when Americans were celebrating the new year, the National Defence Authorization Act, H.R. 1540, was signed into law by President Barack Obama. The actual signing took place in Hawaii on the 31st of December. The National Defense Authorization Act authorizes the arbitrary and indefinite military detention of American citizens. According to Obama's signing statement, the threat of Al-Qaeda to the security of homeland constitutes a justification for repealing fundamental rights and freedoms. The relevant provisions pertaining to civil rights were carefully ensconced in a short section of a document of more than 500 pages. President Obama says he disagrees with the National Defense Authorization Act, but he signs it into law. I have serious reservations with certain provisions that regulate the detention, interrogation, and prosecution of suspected terrorists, the president wrote. He acknowledges that certain provisions of the act, contained in subtitle D, counterterrorism, are unacceptable. If such is the case, he could have either vetoed the act or sent it back to Congress with his objections. The fact of the matter is that both the executive and US Congress are complicit in the drafting of subtitle D. In this regard, Senator Carl Levin, Democrat Michigan, revealed that it was the White House which had asked the Senate Armed Services Committee to remove language from the bill that would have prohibited U.S. citizens' military detention without due process. President Obama justifies the signing of the National Defense Authorization Act for 2012 as a means to combating terrorism, as part of a counterterrorism agenda. But in substance, any American opposed to the policies of the U.S. government can, under the provisions of this act, be labelled a suspected terrorist and arrested under military detention. Already in 2004, Homeland Security defined several categories of potential conspirators or suspected terrorists, including foreign, which could apply to Islamic terrorists, domestic radical groups, which could apply to anti-war and civil rights groups, disgruntled employees, which could apply to labour and union activists, and state-sponsored adversaries, which could apply to rogue states or unstable nations. The unspoken objective in the era of war and social crisis is to repress all forms of domestic protest and dissent. In his signing statement, President Obama says, "Moreover, I want to clarify that my administration will not authorize the indefinite military detention without trial of American citizens. Indeed, I believe that in doing so would break with our most important traditions and values as a nation. My administration will interpret Section 1021 in a manner that ensures that any detention it authorizes complies with the Constitution, the laws of war, and all other applicable law." His administration will not authorize what? Asked Chossudovsky. The implementation of a law endorsed by the executive and signed by the President of the United States? Section 1021 is crystal clear. The executive cannot refuse to implement it. The signing statement does not in any way invalidate or modify the actual signing by President Obama of the National Defense Authorization Act into law. It does not have any bearing on the implementation or enforcement of the law. The National Defense Authorization Act repeals the US Constitution. While the facade of democracy prevails, supported by media propaganda, the American Republic is fractured. The tendency is towards the establishment of a totalitarian state, a military government dressed in civilian clothes. The passage of this act is intimately related to Washington's global military agenda. The military pursuit of worldwide hegemony also requires the militarization of the homeland, namely the demise of the American Republic. In substance, the signing statement is intended to mislead Americans and provide a democratic face to the president, as well as to the unfolding post-9/11 military police state apparatus. The most important traditions and values and derogation of the Bill of Rights and the U.S. Constitution have indeed been repealed, effective on New Year's Day, January 1, 2012. This New Year's Eve, December 31, 2011, signing of the National Defense Authorization Act will indelibly go down as a landmark in American history. Barack Obama will go down in history as the president who killed constitutional democracy in the United States. If we are to put this in a comparative historical context, the relevant provisions of the Act are, in many regards, comparable to those contained in the decree of the Reich President for the Protection of People and the State, commonly known as the Reichstag's Fire Decree, enacted in Germany under the Weimar Republic on 27 February 1933 by President Paul von Hindenburg. Implemented in the immediate wake of the Reichstag's fire, which served as a pretext, this February 1933 decree was used to repeal civil liberties, including the right of habeas corpus. Article 1 of the February 1933 decree of the Reich President for the Protection of People and State suspended civil liberties under the pretext of protecting democracy. Thus, restrictions on personal liberty, on the right of free expression of opinion, including freedom of the press, on the right of association and assembly, and violations of the privacy of postal, telegraphic, and telephonic communications, and warrants for house searches, orders for confiscations, as well as restrictions on property rights, are permissible beyond the legal limits otherwise prescribed, according to Article 1 of the said decree. Constitutional democracy was nullified in Germany through the signing of a presidential decree. The Reichstag's Fire Decree was followed in March 1933 by the Enabling Act, which allowed, or enabled, the Nazi government of Chancellor Adolf Hitler to invoke de facto dictatorial powers. These two decrees enabled the Nazi regime to introduce legislation which was in overt contradiction with the 1919 Weimar Constitution. The following year, upon the death of the President Hindenburg in 1934, Hitler declared the office of President vacant and took over as Führer the combined functions of Chancellor and Head of State. To say that January 1, 2012 is a sad day for America is a gross understatement. The signing of the National Defense Authorization Act into law is tantamount to the militarization of law enforcement, the repeal of the Poscomitatus Act, and the inauguration of the 2012 Police State USA. As in Weimar Germany, fundamental rights and freedoms are repealed under the pretext that democracy is threatened and must be protected. The American Civil Liberties Union has also criticized this act and stresses that the statute contains a sweeping worldwide indefinite detention provision. While President Obama issued a signing statement saying he had serious reservations about the provisions, the statement only applies to how this administration would use the authorities granted by the National Defense Authorization Act and would not affect how the law is interpreted by subsequent administrations. The White House has threatened to veto an earlier version of the act, but reversed course shortly before Congress voted on the final bill. In its press release, the ACLU states that President Obama's action is a blight on his legacy because he will forever be known as the president who signed indefinite detention without charge or trial into law. The statute is particularly dangerous because it has no temporal or geographic limitations and can be used by this and future presidents to militarily detain people captured far from any battlefield. Under the Bush administration, similar claims of worldwide detention authority were used to hold even a US citizen detained on US soil in military custody, and many in Congress now assert that the National Defense Authorization Act should be used in the same way again. The ACLU believes that any military detention of American citizens or others within the United States is unconstitutional and illegal, including under this act. In addition, the breadth of the National Defense Authorization Act's detention authority violates international law because it's not limited to people captured in the context of an actual armed conflict as required by the laws of war. The bill also contains provisions making it difficult to transfer suspects out of military detention, which prompted FBI Director Robert Mueller to testify that it could jeopardize criminal investigations. It also restricts the transfers of cleared detainees from the detention facility at Guantanamo Bay to foreign countries for resettlement or repatriation, making it more difficult to close Guantanamo, as President Obama pledged to do in one of his first acts in office. The Center for Constitutional Rights, CCR, had asked President Obama to veto National Defense Authorization Act in the wake of the House-Senate conference's approval of this controversial piece of legislation. If he doesn't, stated the CCR, he will bear the blame for making indefinite military detention without trial a permanent feature of the US legal system. He will be responsible for signing into law one of the greatest expansions of executive power in our nation's history, allowing the government to lock up citizens and non-citizens without the right to a fair trial. Indefinite detention is contrary to the most fundamental principles of the rule of law. This act will essentially prevent President Obama from bringing men from Guantanamo to the US for trial and severely curtail his ability to resettle them in third countries. More than half of the men currently detained at Guantanamo, 89 of the 171, have been unanimously cleared by the CIA, FBI, NSC and the Defense Department for transfer or release. Yet no one has been transferred since last January, when Congress created restrictions similar to those in the National Defense Authorization Act. This marks the longest period without a transfer in the prison camp's entire 10-year history, and only underscores the President's broken promise and failure to close Guantanamo. Forbes magazine has also published several articles about the National Defense Authorization Act for 2012. Forbes contributor E.D. Kane wrote that the National Defense Authorization Act is the greatest threat to civil liberties that Americans face. In another article published by Forbes on January 2, 2012, he says that the National Defense Authorization Act makes the status quo worse and that the history of anti-terrorism is bad news for civil liberties. According to Kane, the National Defense Authorization Act greatly expands the power and scope of the federal government to fight the war on terror, including codifying into law the indefinite detention of terrorism suspects without trial. Under the new law, the US military has the power to carry out domestic anti-terrorism operations on US soil. The fact that I support this bill as a whole does not mean I agree with everything in it, the president said in a statement. I have signed this bill despite having serious reservations with certain provisions that regulate the detention, interrogation, and prosecution of suspected terrorists. Worse, the National Defense Authorization Act authorized the military to detain even US citizens under the broad new anti-terrorism provisions provided in the bill, once again, without trial. There is some controversy on this point, in part because the law as written is entirely too vague. But whether or not the law will be used to indefinitely detain US citizens domestically, it is written to allow the detention of US citizens abroad, as well as foreigners without trial. Obama's signing statement seems to suggest he already believes he has the authority to indefinitely detain Americans. He just never intends to use it, Adam Serwer writes at Mother Jones. Left unsaid, perhaps deliberately, is the distinction that has dominated the debate over the defense bill, the difference between detaining an American captured domestically or abroad. This is why ACLU Director Anthony Romero released a statement shortly after Obama's, arguing the authority in the defense bill could be used by this and future presidents to militarily detain people captured far from any battlefield. The National Defense Authorization Act makes the status quo worse. Glenn Greenwald makes a compelling case that the law gives the government truly frightening powers. He notes that Section 1022 exempts US citizens from the requirement of military detention, but still leaves the option open to the state. The only provision from which US citizens are exempted here is the requirement of military detention, Greenwald writes. For foreign nationals accused of being members of Al-Qaeda, military detention is mandatory. For US citizens, it is optional. This section does not exempt US citizens from the presidential power of military detention, only from the requirement of military detention. And he continues, the most important point on this issue is the same as underscored in the prior 2 points. The compromise reached by Congress includes language preserving the status quo. That's because the Obama administration already argues that the original 2001 authorization for use of military force authorizes them to act against US citizens. Obviously, if they believe they have the power to target US citizens for assassination, then they believe they have the power to detain US citizens as enemy combatants. The proof that this bill does not expressly exempt US citizens or those captured on US soil is that amendments offered by Senator Feinstein providing expressly for those exemptions were rejected. The compromise was to preserve the status quo by including the provision that the bill is not intended to alter it with regard to American citizens, but that's because proponents of broad detention powers are confident that the status quo already permits such detention. In part, the National Defense Authorization Act helps to preserve the status quo established a decade ago with the original provisions in the Patriot Act, given the government broad new powers in the so-called War on Terror. In part, the bill expands those powers, codifying the use of indefinite detention of foreign nationals and possibly US citizens arrested abroad and at home. In part, the bill expands the use of the US military on domestic soil, at once complicating anti-terrorism strategies at home and raising serious questions about the role of the military in law enforcement. All these things should make Americans, and not just Americans, very nervous about the preservation of their civil liberties. That precarious balance between security and liberty is looking ever more tilted towards the former and away from the latter. The history of anti-terrorism is bad news for civil liberties. Just as troubling, these laws suggest that the legal apparatus available to us is insufficient to the task. While due process may work for any other criminal act, terrorism is unique and requires new and expanded powers that ignore the Constitution. These powers are necessary until hostilities end, as though terror itself can never be extinguished. In the 1970s, the British government began passing a series of anti-terrorism laws that did many of the same things the US government has done since 9/11. At the time, detention without charge was expanded to 7 days. Various other powers of arrest and detention were written into law, and these provisions were expanded gradually through the 1980s as the British government continued to wage its war against the Irish Republican Army. Far from wiping these laws from the books when the IRA disarmed, many of these laws were simply reinforced by the 2001 Anti-Terrorism, Crime and Security Act and the 2005 Prevention of Terrorism Act. The problem with fighting a war on terror is that it's in many ways a war on ideas, and you can't wage war on an idea. In the United States, the Cold War had barely ended before the threat of terrorism replaced it, and, in some ways, became an even more urgent reason to expand government power at the expense of privacy and civil liberties. Unlike the Cold War, Americans have actually died in the War on Terror. Also, unlike the Cold War, the enemy we face is not embodied in another country or people, but rather in a form. Terrorism is a tactic, not a state. It is used to create overreaction in its targets. The initial reaction by the US government to the 9/11 attacks was understandable, but wrong-headed. Over a decade after that national tragedy, the government is still overreacting. Each time we allow our fear to undermine our freedom, we concede to the very terrorists we hope to defeat. The legislation could also give future presidents the authority to throw American citizens into prison for life without charges or a trial, said Senator Bernie Sanders in a statement. This bill also contains misguided provisions that, in the name of fighting terrorism, essentially authorize the indefinite imprisonment of American citizens without charges. While we must aggressively pursue international terrorists and all of those who would do us harm, we must do it in a way that protects the Constitution and the civil liberties which makes us so proud to be Americans. This information has been provided by the New York Times, Michelle Chosadovsky for the Montreal-based Center for Research on Globalization, ACLU, the Center for Constitutional Rights, and E.D. Kane for Forbes. For further information on human rights and states of exception, you can visit Equipo Nisco and Radio Nisco specialist webpages. This program has been prepared and produced by Radio Nisco at our studios in Belgium on January 19th, 2011.